Bible in the States, so I have my tablet with me. So I was asked to talk about my experiences over the last decade or so in the Air Force. For those who don't know me, I'm David Kopp, one of the sons of Charles and Elizabeth Kopp. Usually when I'm here in the country, I'm usually greeted by the phrase, "Oh, you're David Kopp? Oh, you're the last comp for me to meet. Like, I've met all of you, but you're the last one I haven't met yet." So it was never my plan to be gone for so long, but that's just how things kind of played out over the last few years. So I graduated. I'm the fifth of seven children. I graduated in 2000 from the Anglican school, where all my other siblings graduated as well. After that, I went to school in the States, University of Illinois, where I studied engineering, and then I was there for 5 years, and then went into the Air Force for 10 years, where I just completed my 10th and final year. From here, I'm going to go off to Grand Rapids, Michigan, to work for GE Aviation. As I said, it was never my plan to be gone for so long, but I'll talk about here in a bit, but the military made it a little bit difficult for me to get away for quite a few years. When I compare my life of with my siblings, or at least my occupation, I've been the least involved in ministry out of probably all my siblings. Where all of them have at least been involved with the church, or teaching Christian schools, or working in Christian media, or working at a Christian children's hospital, or giving biblical tours of the Holy Land, or getting biblical degrees. I've pursued a career. I got, as I said, an engineering degree, and then I pursued a career in military aviation, teaching or planning war games, and use those two individuals, me as well. Just to top off my intro here, I'll read a verse from Luke 8:39. Return to your home. This is actually after Jesus delivered the man of demons. And he said, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." And he went away proclaiming throughout the whole city how much Jesus had done for him. So it's kind of me talking about my story. I took this verse to as an excuse for me to tell my own story, what God has done for me. As I said, I haven't really been doing much in ministry, and I don't have great stories about how I led people to the Lord in the military or anything like that. But I know God has done a lot for me, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. So I guess before I start, we'll just start off in prayer. Dear God, I thank you for bringing me and my whole family here for a good portion of the summer. And I just pray, Lord, that you speak through me and help me to say the words that you want me to say. And I just pray that you open our hearts and ears and to your words. And I just pray that you bless everyone here today. I thank you in your holy name. Amen. So there's kind of three areas I want to focus on over my career, at least the last few years. And that's kind of how, as I mentioned, I was in the Air Force for 10 years, and I had a drastic change in my the normal progression of where my career should have gone. It changed drastically, and I'll talk about how that happened. And I'll talk about how I met my wife, Erin. I'll talk more about her later, and then and how that change has brought us to where we're going off to next, as I mentioned, Grand Rapids, Michigan. So I allude to flying. That I flew in the Air Force. I flew the F-15E, which is kind of a dual role. We call it, it's a jack of all trades fighter aircraft. To get to that point, when I was in college, I did what is an officer training course. So basically, while you're in a normal school, it wasn't a military academy, it was just your normal college. I joined a program where every week you have several events throughout the week where they train you up, and they're kind of preparing you throughout your time at school to be an officer in the Air Force. So once you're done, once I got my degree, the next day I swore in as an officer. During that time, I was competing with the people in my class to get a flying position. And so I did, and then I got sent off to Florida for 2 years, where I now competed with my peers there to get the aircraft of my choice. So I got the F-15, and then after that, those 2 years in Florida, I had a myriad of training events, whether it was ground survival, water survival, centrifuge, where they spin you around really fast to see if you can handle the G's required for your aircraft, and then a two-month flying course kind of gets you into, teaches you about the fighter fundamentals. So after about 2 years of flying five different propeller and jet aircraft, I finally got to fly into my start a nine-month course to train in the F-15E. And after that nine-month course, I went into my first operational squadron, where now you're actually going to do your job. But there's another 3 months it took me to spin up to get to what they call combat ready. And then after that, you're pretty much ready to go anywhere. So altogether, I like to count college, because I also did basic training in college, and I had all that training while I was in there. So it was about 8 years it took me to get to this point. Through military training or whatever. And from there, my unit was one of the first to deploy right out of training. So we started up a four-month spin-up focusing on the mission that we were going to do in Afghanistan. That's supporting the troops on the ground, so the Army and other individuals out on the ground in Afghanistan. After those 4 months, we were scheduled to deploy at the end of April 2009, and I was getting excited to go. Quite a few others had gone in my squadron before me, and one thing I have to sidetrack here a bit, in the Air Force, there's always investigators coming into a unit wanting to interview different people, interview you or for you or for someone else. So for example, an investigator might come into the squad and say, "Hey, do you know John Smith?" And you're like, "Yeah, I know him." He's like, "Oh, well, can I talk to you a little bit about him?" You know, basically just making sure he's a good guy. You know, and so a month prior to us deploying, an investigator came and started asking me questions about myself, and it was kind of not at the appropriate time. Like, usually it's every 5 years, and it was like at the 3-year point, so it just didn't really make sense. So about 2 or 3 days before we deployed to Afghanistan, I get called into my commander's office and with a few other people who handle my clearance and said, "Hey, there's some questions about your background. Not really sure what's going on, but everything's okay. You can still deploy with us. Everything's going to be normal." And they said, "We're going to figure all this out while you're gone on your deployment, and when you get back, it'll be all good to go." But I can't right now go into what we call our vault, which is kind of important if you want to go fly and train. But I was already caught up with everything. I was already going to deploy regardless. So when we get back from, I spent 4.5 or a little bit over 4 months in Afghanistan, came back, and to find out that still nothing had been done. There's still this question mark on my background. And so I asked them, the people who were in charge, and like, "Hey, yeah, we don't know what's going on." So I'm just kind of hanging out not able to fly because, as I mentioned, I wasn't able to go in our vault. And now I'm slowly, month after month, I'm getting to the point where I'm about to lose all my currencies. not where I would have to kind of start, not all at the beginning, but go through some retraining again. And it gets to the point where I lose all my currencies, so I can't fly, and my unit deployed a year later to Afghanistan, and I really wanted to go because I wanted to take all the new guys, and I wanted to be now the experienced one and show the new guys how it's done or whatever. So I was a little depressed about not being able to get to go again. And it's a few days after my unit deployed for the second time, I'm left behind, and I get a letter saying that the Air Force has decided we're going to take away all your clearances. And here's all the reasons why. So, without laboring the issue, is basically there were investigators I didn't know that were talking to people, and they kind of twisted words and I don't want to say lies, but they just twisted things to make me look very suspicious. And so, when you're dealing with clearances, it's not a right; it's a privilege to have one. So they don't really have to have many. They don't have to give you a clearance, if they decide, there's questions, so we're just not going to let you have one anymore. So I was given the chance to respond to all these allegations, and they gave me a 10-page maximum. So I used every 10 pages and with letters from people kind of helping support my rebuttal to these allegations. So at this point, I'm about 26 years old. My career is going down the drain. Over $10 million of American taxpayer money has been invested in my training and experience, and that's pretty much like been almost wiped clean. So needless to say, I was like very frustrated. There was another also level of frustration there too, and that was growing up, everyone who's probably lived here has probably heard someone even from this stage talk about how as a third culture kid, as an American growing up in Israel, you never really felt completely at home because you're very different compared to everyone else, especially as an American and a Christian, definitely a minority here. So when I left to the U.S., I was extremely excited because I'm an American citizen, even though I didn't grow up there, but everyone speaks and sounds like me, and I was like, yeah, I'm finally going to feel at home. And I understand people hadn't, they probably didn't grow up in other countries like I did, but at least, I'm not under the fear of maybe getting kicked out of the country or something. So, and then even when I got into the military, I was like, oh, yeah, even more, because people in the military usually travel a lot, and they have at least that experience. So I was like, yeah, so now I'm even feeling more at home when I get in the military. And then all of a sudden, they tell me, hey, we don't trust you anymore. You have a questionable background. And I'm like, so I don't belong in Israel. I don't really feel like I belong in the States right now either. So very, very frustrating, as I mentioned. It was around this time where, and I should also mention, since I'm not flying, I'm not doing anything. I'm not just sitting around twiddling my thumbs. There are a lot of jobs for me to do that a normal flyer would have anyways. So I am keeping myself actually pretty busy doing stuff on the ground, just not flying. So it was during this time of frustration where I remember telling God that I was like, things were getting crazy, and I felt, God, you must have a plan for me, and I really hope you do. And I hope one of these things you have planned for me is at least helping me find my wife, because I never had a girlfriend, and I was like super depressed. And I didn't want to just like find a wife. I wanted someone who was like me. Someone who's lived in a different country. Obviously a Christian, I'm living in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina. So there's farmers around me, and I remember kind of like thinking, yeah, this is not going to happen. I'm not going to meet anyone here. So God does have a sense of humor because I met my wife at the doorstep of my house, she was not a mail order bride, I knew her older sister, and that's how I met her, through her older sister, Carrie, which, and I'll quickly now do another sidetrack about Aaron. So Aaron met me at the most frustrating time of my life and career. It was during this time of limbo where I had a little bit more time on my hands. So I got to, we got to start dating, and then I should also say, Aaron, she's, if you were here last week, my dad explained that Aaron's the daughter of David and Joy Swenson, who are Baptist missionaries. They've gone all around the Middle East and North Africa and Malaysia, and they're now retired in Virginia. And for part of the time, she lived in Beit Jala here, which is where I, back in 1998, when I was in high school still, her older sister was, I had a class with her, so not Aaron, Aaron's older sister. So I fast forward 11 years, that's how I got reconnected with Aaron's older sister, and then Aaron's sister stopped by my house one day and brought her sister along, Aaron, my wife, and that's how we met. So we start dating, we get engaged, we start planning to get married, and I call Danny, because as I mentioned, I feel like things aren't going well for me as far as my career-wise, and I talk to Danny, my brother, and I say, hey, maybe I should postpone our wedding because I don't want to get married, and then all of a sudden I lose my job, and I had bought a house, and I'm like, now I can't afford to pay for my house. That's my daughter, Eden, if that wasn't obvious. I didn't want to lose my job and then not be able to pay for the house, because I didn't know also if the way things were going that they might kick me out of the Air Force like with a dishonorable discharge, and that would look really bad, and now it'd be hard for me to find a civilian job, and so all these thoughts are going in my mind, like this, things aren't going well. And so Danny encouraged me. He's like, yeah, it can be a lot easier with two people as opposed to just one. So he's like, it makes sense to get married if things continue to be bad. I do it. I take his advice we get married. We start planning our wedding. So I then have to ask my leadership to come here because, again, I'm not doing things critical. Like flying, when you're flying, that's a critical job. But I'm doing stuff on the ground, which, you know, they can let me go. There's no real need for them to keep me around since I'm not really doing my main job. And this is around the same time I'm submitting my response against all the allegations that the clearance higher-ups wrote about me. So my leadership that was in my squadron, obviously they're all in Afghanistan now, so they put me at a higher level, people who were in, they put me up, yeah, so that basically my boss's boss is now in charge of me. And so when I submit my request to go to Israel to get married, they tell me, no, we're not going to let you go. And so now I'm like, things just can't get much worse. So I complain enough, or it goes up a level, and then finally, luckily, that gets squashed. So, as you know, we got married in December 2010. You may not know. Sorry. I'll just get sidetracked again here for a second. For those of you who knew me before I was married, I may not have been the most pleasant person to be around, especially for my family. And I know, yeah. I know that ever since I got married, people, especially my family, tell me, "Oh, you seem so much happier." And definitely, I know Aaron has helped me to be a much better person, and she's definitely a gift from God. That was definitely a miracle for me. So, we get married, and then 4 months later, I finally hear back from the letter that I submitted about my clearance. And the guy who told me no, you can't go to your wedding. He's the one who delivers the message to me and says, hey, they... And he does this in a very poor fashion. He's very rude about it. He says, basically, they heard your response, but they're deciding that their final answer is to not let you have your clearance. And so I should also say the whole about a year while this has been going on, he's been bad-mouthing me, too. He's been, not to me, but to other people, he's basically saying things like, oh, he's done. I'm going to kick him out of my Air Force. And he's telling people who actually know who I am, and so that's how I find out about this stuff, because they're people who trust me, and they're telling me that these things are being said about me. So now my last option is to go to court, which I'm like, yeah, definitely we'll go to court. So I get this word in April 2011. This is now 2 years after I originally deployed. Now I don't get a court hearing until 8 months later. So this process is just dragging on and extremely painful. So my court hearing is now December 2011, a year after we got married. And even though I know I finally have a hearing, I know that they're also not the final decision. The judge doesn't make the final decision. It gets sent off to another board, and then they make the final decision. So I just know this thing is just going to get dragged on even longer. At the same time, I'm also due for my annual officer report. And every year, officers and everyone in the military gets a report written on them about what they've been doing that whole year. And the leadership above me decides to give me what they call a referral, and that's that in itself, that alone is kind of it's a career killer. So basically, if you just had that on report, you would never make rank, and you would eventually get kicked out. So forget about my whole clearance problems. I mean, that alone was bad, and it most likely was just, I believe that they were doing this just to cover themselves, and I could make assumptions, but there was nothing bad on there other than them saying he can't do his main job, which is flying, so we're going to give him this referral. I have this bad report now on my record. I'm going to my hearing, and there's a few people who are going with me, obviously my wife and some friends, co-workers, and also my when I'm a commander, a different commander comes and supports me. And this is actually where there's a turning point in my story. So I go to my hearing, and I'm sitting next to my lawyer, who's fairly young, and he's just a standard lawyer that you get on every base to kind of defend you if you have any issues. So he's there with me, and as we're sitting in the court, the opposing lawyer comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, I just want you to know." He's talking to my lawyer. He's like, "I've read your client's file, and I'm going to ask your client questions to help you guys out." So he's just basically putting me at ease. And it was pretty amazing. God definitely had his hand on it, because not only did the judge, but also the opposing lawyer never said one bad thing about me. Which is pretty amazing. Because actually Danny had a similar thing where the opposing lawyer was attacking him the whole time, but it worked out well for him. But for me, neither the judge or the opposing lawyer said anything bad. So it was pretty awesome. And also they were talking about how, wow, this is ridiculous that this ever happened to you. So like I said, they weren't the final decision makers, that he sends his recommendation up, and I'm waiting again. Now it's April 2012, and this is 3 years after I originally deployed and found out there was a question mark on me. And I get a phone call on my cell phone, and it's a guy introduces himself as one of the members of the board who were meeting about my clearance. And he said, "Hey, I'm calling you. We don't normally do this. Normally you'd find out by mail or email, but..." He said, I just came out of the meeting, and it was unanimous. We decided to give you a clearance back. He said, "I'm calling you because, again, that your situation is very different and it took so long, and we want to apologize for all that's happened to you. So, it was a great phone call to get. So I now have I have my clearance back, my leadership wants me to go back to flying, and so I'm like, no, I'm not going back to flying. I don't want to be around here any longer. And I actually had orders already to go to Las Vegas. I didn't really know what the job was about, but I was like, I just want to get away. I was like, I'm done being here. I just want to do something different and kind of try to enjoy my last time, my last few years in the Air Force, if I decide to get out. So now, even while I'm in Las Vegas, the leadership there can't send me to leadership courses because things that you need to do to progress in your career, because I have this bad report on me. And so even though I have my clearance back, they're not going to send someone to do the normal progression if they have bad records. So it takes me another year and a half to finally get this bad report taken off and to put a good one in its place. And so altogether, it took about 4.5 years. This is a 4.5 year process out of my 10-year career in the military. So they finally, I get that taken care of, and that was kind of the last thing that was a blemish on my record. And they were able to send me to the appropriate courses and do the normal officer progression. Now, as a side note, while I'm in Las Vegas, my job there, as I mentioned, was to plan war games, and I'm now in charge of this one event in the summer that Israel was going to be a part of. And every country has a U.S. representative. And the individual who was bad-mouthing me and told me I can't go to my wedding, and he, I found out, is the representative at the Pentagon for Israel to come to this exercise I'm in charge of. So he sends me an email, and we're in contact because he has to get information from me to get Israel there. And so anyways, he emails me emails my leadership at Las Vegas and says, Captain Kopp, he's a great officer and he's going to do great work for you while you're there. And anyways, it's just a funny twist in how that happened. So a couple of things. If all this had not happened to me, I probably would never have met Aaron. Or maybe I would have met her, but I would have been extremely busy with flying. Flying and getting ready for deployments is very busy, and you don't have much time. So I know God definitely orchestrated that. As I mentioned, I didn't know what to expect out of my job in Las Vegas. I wouldn't have gotten that job either if this hadn't happened to me. But it was end up being the perfect job for me to get out of the military. Of all the jobs I've known in the Air Force, this was the best one as a stepping stone to get into what I just got hired to do in Grand Rapids. So looking back on it now, I can definitely see God's hand in it all. So with that, I'm going to just read one more verse from 1 Corinthians 2, 1 through 5. And I, when I came to you, brothers, did not come proclaiming to you the testimony of God with lofty speech or wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and much trembling. And my speech and my message were not in plausible words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, and that your faith might not dwell in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. I feel like that, especially that last verse, it really spoke to me, just because I see there's a lot of people out there not maybe necessarily looking to do bad on me, but just didn't have the best wisdom and choice of what the things that they were trying to do to me. But God definitely, I know, was able to turn everything for good there. And I know there's a lot of people in the congregation who are praying for me during this time, so I also want to thank you all for doing that. I know God definitely heard your prayers. So, and I guess I'll close in prayer. Dear God, I thank you so much again for everything you've done in my family's life and for me. And I thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and share what you've done for me in my life. I just pray that you continue to bless everyone here and bless the week ahead of us. And I thank you, Lord, and ask these things in your holy name. Amen.